always down with eating wherever, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's
to me.
All good, man.
I find what I like anywhere.
No, I'm with you, buddy. All right, well, every day at this time, we do a little thing called the 5 at 5. It's famous. It's brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. So, Tyler, fire away. I know these are always great.
So, we made it through the first hour of the program without talking about college football at all.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is a first for any time I've been on this show, actually.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it every day.
But we're going to talk about it now.
Okay.
Obviously, last week, I believe it was on Friday, when Justin Fields finally got his A-OK on the eligibility for next season, and a lot of signs are pointing that Tate Martell is going to get the same thing.
Which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but NCAA is going to NCAA.
Yeah.
Anyways, what's the future of this transfer portal and college football free agency, quote-unquote?
It's scary. It's scary. And I think you could ask, and Tyler, I know you're involved with a lot of high school football, that in a lot of these places where there's recruiting and moving going along, coaches feel like they have to recruit their own players.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the bottom line. I know there's, you know, and listen, I think we're all for players' rights, but at the same time, players make a commitment to go to a school. You get to go to school for free at these places. So if you've just got a deal where it is free agency, that is, boy, you talk about recruiting being a four-year deal, both for guys you have and for guys you want. This is, and fortunately, now there have been, you know, some other guys like Demetrius Robertson came here, but for the most part, it's been a quarterback deal.
Right.
But this is, I don't want to say this is a slippery slope. This is a cliff right here. And just what you've got to deal with here, with all of a sudden the guy's not happy. Well, I'm just going to go and get in the portal, especially if they are granted that immediate eligibility. I have no idea why Tate Martell would possibly be granted that.
Well, his argument is that he committed to play for Urban Meyer.
Okay.
Urban Meyer's retired. Ryan Day as the head coach is not what I signed up for, so that kind of begs the question, okay, well, if a position coach leaves, if an offensive coordinator leaves, is that grounds to get a waiver then,
no,
too?
No, I hear you. Well, so what, you know, could all 80 guys from Ohio State say, I want to look at it?
Theoretically, I guess.
I know. I will say this. I do think the early signing day is a problem on a couple of fronts.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a team standpoint, well, first of all, like you think, and every school is going through this, so let's use Georgia for an example. All right, Kirby, we're trying to get ready for the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You're recruiting like crazy. December is the time of year when coaches are moving, assistant coaches. You're trying to keep your coaches. You know, in our case, Bell Tucker left to be a head coach, tried to find a defensive coordinator there.
Right.
We all know what happened with Chaney later. So you're trying to hang on to coaches, and you've got players. You know, in our case, there were four decided if they were going to turn pro or come back, who decided to turn pro. You got players wanting to transfer out. We lost three. You got players wanting to transfer in. We've gained a couple. The fact that the NFL declaration date is mid-January. I think this year it was the 14th.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, obviously 3-4 weeks after signing day. That's a big problem. And again, I'll use Georgia for an example here. Kind of reading the tea leaves, I felt like Elijah Holyfield was going to come back for his senior year.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people thought that. I'm pretty sure we'd have gotten Trey Sanders, too, if Holyfield had announced
signing
he was gone.
Was like it used to be.
I agree. So I just think there's so much thrown in there. I think it would be better for everybody if signing day stayed on signing day.
What was the original argument for creating the early signing day?
I think it was originally, you know, it was supposed to be like, and I get in the players, but hey, if they don't want to go through the recruiting process, it was, hey, if you're already committed. And kind of my thinking was when it came out that there might be 8-10 guys who would sign. Like, you know, people who've been, guys like Nolan Smith,
like
Trayvon,
early
Walker,
enrollees.
Georgia, yeah, exactly. But it's been almost everybody. And I think that's created some problems. So now, if the NCAA is saying that, well, your head coach is gone, you can go, or if a position coach goes, that's when coaches move.
That's Pandora's box right there.
And I mean, look at the example with USC, that Brew McCoy kid.
One day on campus.
Boom, is granted. And so he's at Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
He transferred to Texas before the original, what used to be signing day, which is now the second signing day. He was already gone because of Cliff Kingsbury, the coordinator.
Right.
I think if the coaches had their way, I think they would keep signing day when signing day is, because it's so big, especially for the big boys, with the scholarship allocation. Now, the schools that like signing day when it is, I'll give you an example. Let's go South Florida. Here's why. Mm-hmm. Okay, Florida's in on a hypothetical five-star Tyler Head, split in, blazing speed, built like a Greek god, right? Guy's a bird.
I like to think so.
Okay, Florida's in on him. Georgia's in on him. Okay, Florida's alternate option is this three-star named Jeff Dantzler. He's not very fast, but, man, he's got a lot of heart. Okay.
Rudy.
There you go. Okay, so they're thinking about me. Well, at the same time, South Florida, USF, they want me. They're like, listen, you can come in here. Man, you could be a frontline player. I could bulk you up and get you to the NFL as a tight end or something. Okay, I'm hearing that. But I'm sitting there waiting. And, well, next thing you know, Tyler Head goes to Georgia, okay? So they were saving, you know, they had that last scholarship reserved for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now all of a sudden the Gators call me and they're like, hey, Tyler Head's going to Georgia. You know, you can come to Florida and get that spot. Boom, gone, okay? Whereas now with the early signing with USF, they might be saying, like, well, you know, you've got that early date now where you go ahead and sign. So if Tyler Head's going to wait until the second signing day, because a lot of the high-end guys are choosing to do that. Not as many as I thought, but so now at that point, Florida's still got to keep that spot open for you.
Right.
So I've got to sign with USF unless I want to play the game of, well, I'm betting Tyler Head's going to sign with Georgia and Florida's going to save that last spot for me.
Yeah.
And that's risky.
Yeah, it is. Sure.
And so if you're doing that, then all of a sudden at USF, it's like, well, are they going to hold that spot for me? So I think because of that, that's why a lot of the quote-unquote mid-majors or the non-Power Fives like the early signing period.
Yeah.
Just because of the fallback players.
Scraps.
But then there are a lot of good players that come out of that pool.
Yeah.
We all know that.
What is it? I guess we can technically call it leftover signing day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, day after Thanksgiving signing
day. So that's why the mid-majors won't. They're so guys that sign with South Florida. I can tell you this. We lost a five-star. I don't even remember who it was. We lost a five-star back in 2002. You know who we signed in his place? Tim Jennings. And if we hadn't had that spot, he was going to South Carolina State. So with an early signing period, a guy might have been at South Carolina State. You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know.
It's interesting you bring up 2002 because you'll hear more about that in a minute.
Okay.
Moving along at the 5 at 5 here, we were talking with Cuts earlier about golf, and you briefly mentioned, the younger generation, how we view golf and stuff like that. Obviously, you're a big golf and tennis guy.
Yes.
How do you feel both of those professional leagues are doing appealing to the younger generation?
I think golf is in really good shape. There are a lot of terrific, terrific players out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the PGA Tour is very well organized. It's fun to watch. I think they're making a huge mistake moving the PGA from August to May, and I don't like this wraparound schedule. I mean, I think for a lot of people, and so much of it, it revolves around football. It's like, all right, we're going to start the season in Maui with the Tournament of Champions, and then, by the time football gets here, golf season's done. So
right.
I think they made a mistake there. But obviously golf is a sport that is star driven. And nobody has tilted the meter, you know, like Tiger Woods has. So
right.
I think you could even see the popularity when he won at Eastlake, just the crowds that were there. I think golf is in good shape. One thing though that has, I think, hit golf. Now this past weekend is one of the glamour events at Pebble Beach, and plus with the US Open being there, everybody was playing in it.
Right.
Is it the money is just so good.
Mm-hmm.
The star players, you don't have to play as much.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that can hurt the tour. I think for tennis, internationally, it's in incredible shape because right now you've got arguably the three best players there have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And they have combined for 52 Grand Slam titles. It is incredible. Now, unfortunately, none of those three guys are Americans. And I think back to when tennis was bigger than golf was back in the early to mid 1980s. And a lot of the reason was, well, you had John McEnroe and you had Jimmy Connors there. So hopefully a couple of great Americans will come along here. You know, our man Big John Isner certainly flew the flag well, making the semifinals at Wimbledon and in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open. So hopefully there's some great young talent coming up here. So I do love tennis, but again, it's one of those deals where you've got, for most sports fans, you're only paying attention
to the majors
during the four majors.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
As a casual viewer.
Yes, so I do. I think, and then women's tennis is just, I know Brame loves it. It is the most, just what in the world, anything can happen. I mean, it's insane.
The intensity.
Yeah, it's crazy. Right, and it's just, I mean, you'll see matches go 6-0, 1-6, 6-0.
Yeah.
And it's anybody, you know, once Serena kind of lost her dominance, she's still one of the best. I mean, trying to pick who was going to win a tournament was darn near impossible. I mean, you could come up with a list of 10,
right?
And that player might not be on that list. But I think tennis internationally is incredibly healthy. But you know, it would be nice to have a couple of young American stars come up.
Right. Okay, moving on, jumping over to the hardwood now. Obviously, you do all the Lady Dog games.
Yeah,
you do a couple
of
the men's game as well. College basketball is different between men's and women's in the fact that men play a two-half system, two 20-minute halves. Women play the four 10-minute quarters, which is what most basketball organizations do. They utilize the four-quarter
method. I think,
really,
men's college basketball is the last that does halves. It's kind of like the National League with the DH, right?
Do you think men should go to the four-quarter system?
Yes.
What's the difference between the two and how the game is played?
The four-quarter game, it moves a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And I think a big reason for that, and I'm going to tell you how the media timeouts work here. You get, I think everybody who watches it a lot probably knows this. You get the first dead ball under 16, 12, 8, and 4. There's a media timeout. And then in the second half, the first called timeout is a media timeout. So there are 9 media timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
I did broadcast one game. LSU killed us in 2006 where a timeout was not called the entire game. That was nuts.
Oh, wow.
But anyways, all right, now what you do in the women's game, now there is the break between the first and second and the third and fourth quarters.
Yes.
Okay. But it's the first dead ball under 5
mm-hmm.
in each of the four quarters and the first called timeout of the second half. So you've got 2 fewer breaks there. And I think because of that, the flow of the game, it's just a lot better. And I just, you know, for whatever reason, this is nuts. If I'm sitting there, and I know this is going to sound crazy, if there's 8 minutes and 37 seconds to go in the fourth quarter as opposed to 8 minutes and 37 seconds to go in the second half, which is the same thing, that 8:37 is going to move a lot faster because you've only got that one media timeout
coming up. Almost psychological.
But when you know you've got that second one, so, and it's almost like you're kind of play into that next timeout,
right?
And then I think with that, in the women's game, I haven't seen coaches quite as much just feeling the need to burn all those timeouts at the end of games.
Yeah, I have noticed that too. They don't take as many timeouts.
And they'll save them too, because I don't necessarily agree with the rule, but it does add excitement. And in the women's game, in the last minute, you can advance, in the last minute of the game, you can advance the ball to the hash, like in the NBA.
Right.
So you'll see coaches, they want to save those timeouts to do that. But if a game's, you know, 10, 11 points or more,
there's no point.
And that's not in play, sometimes you just won't see the timeouts used.
Right.
So, I mean, and I'm telling you that we had a game earlier this year that, I mean, the game itself lasted like an hour and 35 minutes. Like, we come on the air 15 minutes before.
Yep.
So let's say it was a 1 o'clock tip. Tell you, I was off the air. Postgame said, good day at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I think I was in here for that one.
Yeah.
I think I remember it.
Yeah, so I just think the game moves better. And listen, here's the thing. A 3-hour sporting event, if there's action the whole time, it's awesome. I'll watch it. But the problem is what's happened with basketball, too, and this doesn't necessarily have as much to do with the halves and quarters. You can have the first 38 minutes of a basketball game be an hour and 20-minute fun ride with all kinds of action. Then in the last 2 minutes between the foul and the timeouts, it 2 minutes can take 25 minutes.
Yeah, it can.
And that's a grind.
Yep.
That's hard to watch. That's it like is. In baseball when you do the dance. Oh, the catcher came out. Now, now the skipper's coming out, yep. and we're going to wait on the umpire. Then you're going to make the pitching change. And you got sorry, there's 10 minutes between actual pitches in a game. To the point.
Yep.
Nobody likes to see nothing happening.
Yep. And the game being played in 0.8 intervals at a time.
Correct. So I'm a fan of the quarters. I thought, you know, the men have experimented with that in the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they might go that route.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will at some point because even the international games in quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the NBA, high school,
yep.
women's,
yep.
high school girls.
Middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's in quarters.
Everything's in quarters.
So I like it. What do you think on it?
Oh, I agree with it too. And, you know, being in here for the men's and women's game, those women's games fly by because they're not using as many timeouts.
Yeah.
That's just what I've noticed from being in here and doing that job and doing high school, you know, calling high school mm-hmm. basketball games that I do and everything. Man, that first quarter flies by. Second quarter's a little bit slower. Fourth quarter's a little bit slower. Those middle quarters,
mm-hmm.
they're a breeze. And I think they're only 8 minutes in high school.
They're right. That's right. High school's eight.
Breeze through them pretty quick.
Yeah, they do. You really do zip through them. And it's so I think having the fewer media timeouts is obviously a big deal. And then again, just wanting to keep those timeouts for late in the game,
yep.
just in case. And it's like yesterday, I don't think we called a timeout. Florida called two. We were on a run in the first quarter, and they banged one. Then in the second quarter, they were just plumb tired in the second half. I'm sorry, early in the third quarter. But it was one of those, like, the game had gotten out of hand, so you know we didn't spend a timeout. Then at the end, they weren't, and it just
– Right.
It flew by. It was great.
Right.
Plus, we won by 35.
All right, closing up 5-5. Got two more questions for you real quick. Favorite sports theme song, as in like an intro song or something like that? Like, you know, Monday Night Football, those kind of things.
That's a great question. I think hearing the – before the Dogs play in a big game on CBS, hearing the –
That's mine, too.
That's
– Get you jazzed up.
That's
– I prefer to listen to that on Saturday mornings, like get up and, like, go on YouTube and find the song, listen to it a couple times.
And it sounds like – it sounds like a college marching band,
too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's mine, too.
Yeah, there used to be the NBA on NBC, and a lot of this, too, is when Jordan was playing. That was really, really good stuff there. So, but, yeah, I would probably say the CBS college football would probably be number one. Probably my favorite theme song ever, though, was the intro to the TV show Coach. Because I love college football so much. It's just a great song. Hayden Fox was one of my great heroes there. So, all right, I'm glad we're in agreement on that. That's good stuff.
All right, closing out the 5-5. Last week, you and Brame were at the Blind Pig for Signing Day Light, as you guys like to call it. And I got to listen to a little bit of it in between classes. And you guys were talking about offensive linemen, and you rattled off correctly the weight of the Notre Dame offensive line from that Sugar Bowl back in 81.
Right.
So I've pulled up the 2002 UGA offensive line.
Okay.
First off, can you name every player, and let's see how close you can get to their weights.
Yeah, I'm trying. Now, we rotated a couple of guys around. Stinch was an offensive tackle.
Correct.
Now, I'm trying to think, were we going with a split tackle, weak tackle then?
Yes.
Okay. So Stinch was, I guess he was the split tackle.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, John was – what did we list John at? 6'3"? What did we play at? 295?
6'6", 297.
Okay. John's – he's not quite 6'6", but, you know, we did.
They fudged the numbers a little
bit. Okay, the guards would have been Breedlove and Alex Jackson.
Correct.
The other did we list Kareem Marshall as a starter at the other tackle or George Foster?
Marshall. George Foster is listed as the backup to Stinchcomb.
Right, okay. And then the center was Ian Knight.
Right.
So Breedlove, I would guess he was probably 6'3", 305.
6'2", 300.
Okay, Ajax, he was a big dude. He was probably 6'3", 325.
6'4", 335.
Okay, and then Kareem Marshall was huge. He was probably 6'6", 340.
6'5", 328.
Okay, and then Ian Knight – he was originally a tight end. Did we list Ian at 6'4"?
6'3".
Okay, and I would guess, what, 295?
286.
Yeah.
You're close.
So that was, isn't that 286? Under 6'3", 286.
Yeah.
Like, do you know how big that is?
Yeah. And now that's considered undersized,
right,
severely
like I'm just
undersized.
Telling you, if a dude walked in here who was 6'3", 286, you'd say, oh, my God, that guy's massive.
Yeah. No, I have a class with Cade Mays. I
that
know.
That dude is massive.
He's a big dude. Like I see it a couple times a week. He's a big boy.
He is huge.
So, yeah, I see Ben Cleveland around as well.
He is really huge.
He's big. I heard he wanted to be a professional wrestler one
He'll
day.
Be great at it.
Oh, yeah, no, without a doubt.
Whatever he wants to do.
Who's going to tell him no, right?
But, yeah, Big Ben and Cade, Charlie Werner and Fromm, those guys, they like to go in the woods.
Yeah, oh, no, without a doubt. I can see that.
They say LeCount goes with them sometimes, too. Because he's from down in Liberty County, so he's got a little country boy at him,
sure
too.
I'm sure he's chased a few squirrels in his day.
Absolutely. So they're out shooting at things or fishing for things. I like it, though.
Me too.
Well, I think that was a big thing. Like, I thought Cade Mays was still as great as Kirby is, and I still thought Cade was going to be a long shot. But they said when he came down here, like I guess Charlie and Jake and Ben took him hunting, and everybody's like, no, he's coming. He's a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my gosh, it's awesome.
Knoxville boy.
That's a big dude.
He's a big dude. Big old boy.
He is a big dude. All right, that
Glad to have him on our side.
That is a great job by my band, T-Bone, Tyler Head, with a 5 at 5.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.